This is an AMI podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Double Tap. It's Friday, it's the 26th of April, 2024. Coming up today, a new WeWalk smart cane has just been announced, and Negative Julian's still confused.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey, Sean Preece, how are you doing today? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Stephen Scott. I'm annoyed.
Okay.
It's my turn. I'm going to have a rant for a change because...
Oh, well done. Well done.
Thank
it's
you.
About time that you've had a
Thank
rant.
Thank you.
I haven't ranted for a while.
Oh, dear. Yeah, straight face.
Moving on, yeah.
Why is it that once a week, every week, I've got to deal with taking part in some sort of wipeout, Ninja Warrior quiz show because of it? It's bin collection day, trash day, whatever you want to call it. Now, this may be very UK specific, and I apologise, but I'm missing the 70s, right? Back in the 70s, they used to come to your house, pick up your bin and take it away. Now, I went out this morning and I must have fallen over like six bins, and the bins over here are chest height. They are huge. It's terrible. When did that happen? When is that suddenly okay to now the sidewalk's full of these obstacles? I'm really annoyed by it. I need some sort of smart cane.
Well, it's funny you mention that. Your timing couldn't be better.
Breaking news.
Guess what? There's a new smart cane out that might be able to save your life. And your sanity, by the sounds of it, as well.
Sometimes it gets just... Sorry, oh, I haven't quite finished. Just gets too much. You know, it's fine, I'm doing... But then this morning I had to... A car parked halfway on the pavement. Not a problem, it's okay. I'm used to it, I can go around it. And then there's these huge bins either side of it that I walk into because you can't even... So you got to go into the road. It's just so frustrating. Sorry, carry on.
No, listen, I'm 100% with you. I find I get frustrated these days when I bump into something, not necessarily outside, even in the house. I'll sometimes bump into a door frame I'll bump into the door that's kind of become ajar as it's been sitting not closed over properly. And so I bump into the side of the door. But it's like, I don't know about you, but it feels like, I don't know, you get such a frustration just in that moment because I think it's because you feel I've done something I shouldn't necessarily do. I've made a mistake. And, you know, I've misjudged this. You think, because look, when you're blind, you're always thinking, you're always aware of your surroundings. You're always counting the steps. You're always, you know, it's like, I go down the stairs sometimes in the morning and I'm not fully concentrating. And I really panic when I get to the bottom of the stairs. I'm like, is this the bottom? Is this it?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I have come off the second or third step sometimes, and that's scary. You come off the second step and you're just suddenly like one of those... Was it Wile E. Coyote, you know, just
like
straight off the cliff, just it's holding for a second and then, boom, gone.
That's in your house. When you do it outside, you think, oh, is this the end of me? Have I just walked off something, a cliff?
Yeah.
It's terrifying for that split second. Oh, anyway, sorry, yes, I'm having a bad blind day.
No, look, I get it, 100%. Yeah, it's a common problem. You're not alone, I'll tell you that. But the smart cane. So, look, this has been an interesting time because, of course, I've been talking so much about these devices recently. And I have a feeling I was mentioning on Twitter last night and on Mastodon as well. I'm saying, you know, I'm going to have my comments on the WeWalk. And I could just sense people's reaction being, I think we know what this is going to be. But look, honestly, I want to give these devices a fair shake because, you know, I think that, at the end of the day, this is new and interesting territory for us. It's, you know, bringing smart technology onto a device like the White Cane. The WeWalk Smart Cane, the first edition, if I'm totally honest, for me as a device, forget the things I've said before about, you know, engagement and with the user community and all that stuff. I mean, that we'll park that for a second. The actual device itself was big. It was bulky. It didn't work in the rain, which was a big issue for me because I live in Scotland where it rains every single day, even during the height of summer. And, you know, something I could trust to go out with all the time. And it was quite top heavy because of the design.
Yes, it was. That's true. But can we just come back to this can't go out in the rain? Is it a case you couldn't, or they just recommended not to be used in the rain?
Probably recommended they couldn't.
I'm being a bit semantic here, but yeah.
Someone says to you, don't go out in the rain with this thing, you're not going to get out in the rain with it.
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. Okay, sorry, carry on.
So the Smart Cane 2 has been announced. And they were saying in the presentation video that was aired last night that it's been 5 years since the launch of the WeWalk Smart Cane. Now, it's been around longer than that, actually, because I remember seeing it, and it must have been prototype at that time, years earlier than that. It's been around for a long time, but it must have been 5 years since the actual launch of the product. So the first edition's been out for that length of time. That's a lot of time, actually. And that tells you, or at least you hope, that that means a lot of development has gone into this new version, and therefore, in theory, this should be totally different. And it kind of feels like it might be. So the presentation took place last night. We're going to go through some of it because there was quite a lot in there, and I want to break it down a little bit into the various sections. But I've got to say, first off, love the new redesign. So they have actually made this look like, haven't got hands on with it, but certainly look as if it is more like the traditional white cane handle. Now, they say it's lighter as well, which is cool because that was another issue. Although it wasn't massively heavy, to be honest. WeWalk One wasn't massively heavy, but it was just the size was awkward. It wasn't comfortable to hold. This is more natural. It's got lots of buttons on there, which I'm slightly confused as to what they're all for. It does have the chest-height obstacle avoidance, so you would certainly find your wheelie bins if you were struggling to find them. That would be pretty cool. It's got a flashlight on it as well. Don't know the power of it, but that sounds pretty interesting. You know, for a lot of people who've maybe got, we talked about this before, you know, you said it's going to be great to have a light on the cane. Well, there you go. Yeah. It's built into this. And it's got AI integration. Now, of course, everything's got AI integration these days, but Hooray. What does that mean for this? Well, let's get into it. So let's actually listen to some of the presentation from WeWalk. Joe Alfonso started off proceedings last night and explained a little bit about the history. And we also get an audio-described tour of the new WeWalk Smart Cane 2. Let's listen in.
Today is something that we've been waiting for more than just weeks. It's been years in the making. And today, we are thrilled to finally be able to share the work that we've been doing. Now, 5 years ago, we launched our first Smart Cane. And we're proud to say it's reached thousands of visually impaired people across the world, becoming a valuable tool for their independent mobility. We learned a lot over the years, thanks to you, and it pushed us to take things even further. We advanced our technology over the years, thanks to your assistance, years of research, development, user engagement, and everything in between.
The white cane. A symbol of independence and empowerment over a century.
WeWalk Smart Cane 2 appeared on the screen. Its usage area was shown. There are buttons on it in black color.
And for the first time ever, a smart cane has achieved the ergonomic perfection of a traditional white cane, revolutionizing it without compromise.
The button part of the cane was shown closely.
Introducing WeWalk Smart Cane 2. Our most advanced smart mobility companion, packed with groundbreaking safety, navigation features, and AI.
Navigation, public transport, and building symbols appeared on the handle of the cane.
WeWalk's intelligent voice assistant can take you wherever you want to go. Through walking or public transport, discover and explore like never
before.
Location
Central Park, destination Times Square was written. Lines were drawn from the starting point to the destination on the map.
Conversational AI technology lets you ask your smart cane anything and everything with a simple press of a button. Simply ask, and WeWalk guides you.
The button on the handle of the WeWalk cane appeared.
Fancy a tour around New York?
Sound waves shown in a semicircle form.
Certainly. Starting from your current spot, enjoy 20 minutes at Times Square, and then a leisurely 30-minute walk through Central Park.
With the light turned on from the cane, an image came from a street, a crowded street, and pedestrians are walking. Components inside the WeWalk Smart Cane appeared, zoomed into the speaker part.
Equipped with powerful Harman audio to deliver exceptional sound quality through every step of your journey.
The speaker vibrated. The handle design of the cane was shown closely. It is black and four buttons on it.
A sleek and durable design allows you to enjoy your smart cane, no matter the weather.
The sensor part of the cane was shown.
Last but certainly not least, safety first. WeWalk has that covered with overhead obstacle detection, combining world-first sensing with immediate haptic and audio feedback. Nothing can get in the way.
White lines from a WeWalk cane and red signal lines from a sign intertwine. It stopped as he approached the sign.
Your imagination is our reality. Meet WeWalk Smart Cane 2 and say hello to unlimited mobility.
The cane folded into the letter W wrote WeWalk on the screen.
So that was part of the video that was shown on screen at the event last night, and audio described as well, which is, of course, great. So first thoughts, Sean, because there you go. That is the design, essentially, the new design with the functionality. And of course, there's lots of features we can talk about.
Yeah, I'm actually impressed. I mean, it makes sense to me. I love the thought of conversational AI built into your cane, especially when it comes to if it's able to do turn by turn. And you know, you can ask it something simple to get me somewhere, and it gives you the response live from cane. I think that's quite impressive. I've got to say, though, I'm slightly concerned. Now, I didn't watch this live. I looked at this afterwards. I'm slightly concerned by the almost, it just feels a bit too PR-y, a bit too marketing. The description of what the actual graphics on the screen were. I really want to just see someone using this cane, or hear someone using this cane actually doing its thing. This just seemed a little bit polished and produced. And I get that. And I'm not, you know, maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit.
I'm okay with that because, look, well, for a start.
Of course, I get it.
Well, yeah. For a start, look, I think there's one thing I've been saying as well, amongst a lot of other things I've said over the years, is I think some of these presentations are a little bit too vanilla. You know, you think when you're spending a lot of money for something, I kind of want it to be sexy. I kind of want it to be presented in a cool way. I want to feel like I'm buying the future rather than just buying another thing. You know, almost like a medical device, because I feel that's the problem with a lot of this stuff.
No, yeah, I totally agree. But the thing about, you know, lines on the screen and everything, is that actually how it does it? No, it doesn't. This is all graphics and it's being described you can still have, you know, production and have it polished and feel professional, but still show it actually doing its thing, how it really works out there. Do you know what I mean?
I feel there's a challenge sometimes, and I understand why it happens, but I think sometimes people forget who the audience is. It's like, this is a blind audience. To me, that entire presentation could have had a blank screen, and it would have made no difference at all to the audience. In fact, it would probably have been preferred if the whole thing had been fully described and demonstrated rather than, and done in that style, you know, done in a cool style. You know, that could have been done. But I feel, you know, one thing that was definitely missing from this whole presentation was a demonstration of the features. They did talk about them, though, and I want to get into this a little bit because Jean-Marc Fagali, who has been on our show before a long time back when WeWalk version 1 was out, he came on and talked to us. Well, he was on the presentation last night as well, and he talked about some of the features. So this is the bit I think we're most interested in. No demo, sadly, but he did talk through a lot of these features in more detail. So let's listen into some of that.
So first and foremost, WeWalk Smart Cane 2 feels just like a standard white cane, and you hold it like a white cane as well. So it's suitable for a variety of hand sizes. It's controlled through buttons, so everything is just a press away. We've even got dedicated buttons for obstacle detection and flashlight. That's right, WeWalk Smart Cane 2 has a flashlight. And it's suitable for all weather conditions, be it snow, rain, or sunshine. WeWalk will be there for you. And our sound system is custom tuned and designed by Harman through our forwards facing built-in speaker. We don't just want WeWalk to take visually impaired people from point A to point B. We want our smart cane technology to unlock experiences that we've never had before as a community. With WeWalk Smart Cane 2, getting navigation, exploration, saving locations, accessing public transport, all of that is now much easier than ever. Obstacle detection was a real crowd favorite in Smart Cane 1. And in Smart Cane 2, we've made it even better. We've teamed up with TDK, and we've now got a groundbreaking new ultrasonic sensor in Smart Cane 2. It's actually never been used in a Smart Cane before. Now pair that up with a redesigned audio and haptic alert system, and no obstacles will ever get in your way. We've taken on board a lot of user feedback from Smart Cane 1. And what we found is that users want to hit the ground walking as quickly as possible. And that's been a key design consideration for WeWalk Smart Cane 2. Right out of the box, you've got an Ambutex shaft included, So you just simply clip on your WeWalk and you're good to go. WeWalk also communicates to you via speech, so it'll talk you through all its setup procedures and get you going seamlessly. SmartCane 2 is now easier to operate thanks to our use of buttons. We've got buttons for navigation, obstacle detection, saving locations. All of WeWalk's features are quite literally at your fingertips. And there's more, our intelligent voice assistant. Because WeWalk users would always ask us, can I talk to WeWalk? Will it talk to me? Well, thanks to our intelligent voice assistant and our natural speech recognition, you could do just that. Say you're at a bus stop. You can ask WeWalk, hey, when's the next bus going to be arriving? And if it's going to be a bit of a wait, you can ask it about nearby cafes and restaurants, even what's on the menu. And thanks to our integration with GPT, you really can ask WeWalk anything and everything. It's why we think of WeWalk like a smart mobility companion that's got your back whenever you need it.
So a bit more detail there on the individual features. Also that ChatGPT integration as well, which I think, you know what, I'm going to say it. I am intrigued by this. I'm really intrigued by this. Not necessarily because, oh, it's got AI in it, but because of the ability to use this whilst out and about and be able to essentially have a free hand. Because the problem I have is, a lot of people will say, and I'm sure you'll say this, well, I could do all this on my phone. Yeah, yes. And you can, but when you're on the move, it can be quite challenging because you've only got one free hand. Now, if I'm out, for example, with a bag or I've got a case with me, I don't have that free hand to do a lot of that kind of stuff, to get that kind of information, especially transport information or navigation information through the cane itself via speaker. And of course, there's obviously question marks around how loud that speaker is going to be when you're in a busy environment. Will we be able to hear it? Do we really want that to be screaming out in public? I don't know. And obviously, you can connect Bluetooth headphones to it, but then often we do have Bluetooth headphones already connected to our head with voiceover on our phone and all of that. So I don't know. It's one of those where until we try it, we don't really know how useful all this will be in reality. But I do like the idea of this. This is quite interesting.
No, absolutely. I totally agree. And I don't want to come across like I'm being negative at all here. I think the integration of AI is really a good idea. And there's an extra aspect to this as well. And that is the, I haven't seen AI work like this before, as in being totally aware of your location.
Mm.
Every time I use AI, I need to say, what's the weather where I am? And I need to say that, you know, Manchester or whatever. It's not aware of my location or situation. Now, if you can use this for navigation, and as it said there, you know, it knows what bus stop you're at, that's new and that's really useful.
And it's the around me stuff as well. And again, getting easy access to it, because oftentimes I am places and I'll think, I have no idea what's around me. You know, people say to me, I've cited friends who say to me all the time, why don't you just go for a coffee where you are? And I'm like, I have no idea where there's a coffee shop. Are you kidding me? I could be standing next to five coffee shops and have no idea. Okay, granted, I probably smell the coffee coming out of them. But you know what I mean? It's like you don't necessarily know where something is. You know, it might just be there, but it's only just there if you can see it. If you can't see it, you don't know it's there. Whereas
it's a million
if this
miles
thing
away.
Can say, exactly. Yeah. And if this thing can say to you, well, actually, you've got a coffee shop on your left or there's a whatever over here, you know, almost like bringing that soundscape into this. How that will work, I don't know. But I do think this could be pretty interesting. I mean, I like the functionality of it. In terms of the ability, and the one area of this, which I think is the only bit of it that kind of makes me a little bit nervous, just as a user of a white cane, is the obstacle detection. As much as I love the idea of it, again, does it get in the way of the feedback I'm getting from the cane? Or if I'm using the cane properly, does it really matter? And I think this comes down to training. A lot of this is going to come down to training.
That's
because
true.
If you buy this, as I probably will, I must admit, I am intrigued by this. But if I bought this and I just head out and use this, I'm probably not going to get the max out of it on my own. I probably could do with some training on it. And of course, this is going to be another challenge for the company and for devices like this. because you need to learn how that sensor works. You need to learn how. And I remember the Sunu band was exactly the same. It gave me so much information. And I kept wondering, is it because I'm doing this wrong? Or is it because it just is seeing so much? You know, what is that scope of vision? It would tell you what its scope of vision was, but I couldn't really understand what that meant. What do you mean you've got 200 degrees view? Well, what does that even mean? And what should I set it to be less than that? And if I do I miss things? And, you know, it all seemed very trial and error. Whereas, you know, it would be good to be able to build in some kind of training approach with this. Now, that is something not necessarily on device itself, but they did talk about working with orientation and mobility specialists around the world to be able to get people on the move using this. Now, not on their own, okay? So the idea would be, because I can imagine a lot of people might worry about this, the idea of suddenly, you know, you get a cane and the cane is doing the training for you. That's not the suggestion here. Because I think, you know, we all know the lack of availability of orientation mobility trainers as it is. But it is actually built, I think this is actually pretty smart. Because what they're suggesting here is that a lot of these ONEM specialists, they have heavy caseloads. They have a lot of work to do. And they can't possibly keep up with every single client all the time. So what if they had access to a system that could actually give you user data of the cane? Like actually how the cane is used every day when that person is out and about doing what they do. And actually be able to use that to measure the person's progress. So, for example, maybe a trainer goes out, does 3-4 lessons with someone, and then is able to then follow up with that individual remotely. That could actually really, I think, make a big difference to orientation and mobility specialist support. Because you don't then have to be out every time watching this person physically, actually being with that person. You've got data available. And again, this is something I've never heard about before. This is fairly new to me, this kind of technology being used in this way.
This really stood out to me. And actually, I'm going to slightly disagree with you. I was hoping, you mean my cane can teach me O&M? That sounds fantastic to me. But no, you're right. This is basically, it's recording the metrics. So the distance of your sweep of your cane or the angle you're holding the cane to the sidewalk, to the ground, for example. All those metrics are recorded. It's a fitness tracker, but for white canes.
It's more powerful than that, though, isn't it? I mean, in terms of the data it's providing. It's providing accurate data that individual needs rather than just steps, info, or whatever else.
And of course, that comes down to, actually the O&M instructor themselves. I'm assuming there's been a lot of consultation with this. How useful is this data to an O&M instructor? I have no idea, but I think this is a really interesting direction to go. And as you said, look, the caseload for O&M is amazing. And never mind actually, you know, the distance or how close is your nearest O&M anyway? This could be done remotely. Obviously, this is all follow-up, though. You still need that initial
Nothing should take away from that. You need to have those individual sessions but in the initial stages. But I think this is where, and I'm guessing WeWalk are perhaps thinking this is a great way to get these canes out into the wider population. I don't disagree with that, especially if it comes with some form of training with it. Because if that individual, an O&M instructor, can actually help, I mean, I would be calling up my local office and saying, hey, look, I really want to get a smart cane. I want to use something like this. Can I get some training with it? And I would take that training. I'd really take that training and I'd love that. Even though I am a long cane trained user, I'd still want that training on that device to get the most out of it. Because I think that's sometimes there's a bit of a knowledge gap. You get something like this and you know, we hear about all the potential, but it's trying to realize it on your own. And if it doesn't work, well, we all know how we feel about this. We all very quickly just go, it doesn't work. Couldn't get it to do it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's in the drawer. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Speaking of this, I want to bring in Jean-Marc Fagali again, who was doing that presentation on this. And he talked about mobility training. Here's what he had to say about this particular functionality.
We've heard from orientation and mobility professionals that they're just not getting the right amount of data. This is especially the case when you've got large caseloads and big gaps between meetings. We get questions like, is their functional performance improving? Are they going out more independently? What about their cane technique? We want to fix that with AI Mobility and Smart Cane 2. Using WeWalk Smart Cane 2's built-in sensors, you can find out information like the cane swipe angle, the pitch angle that the cane makes to the ground, even the number of swipes per step. What's more, you can set training regimes and set goals with students. Students can even record their self-reported confidence and whether they've visited new places. These are metrics that we've simply never been able to capture before. With Smart Cane 2 and artificial intelligence mobility, sightloss organizations can now better monitor the positive impact that they're having on their communities, with users' permission, of course.
Now, look, I can hear a lot of people saying, well, hang on, Stephen, you sound like a bit of a hypocrite here, because one minute you're saying, you know, these devices come out, suddenly we're all becoming beta testers and you're having to pay hundreds or thousands of dollars to get this device and beta test it for the company, and you're now talking about buying this thing. Look, I am not going to look past innovation that could help me just to prove a point. That's not who I am. That's not the kind of guy I am. So for me, if something's going to work for me, I'll buy it for me. I think the issue for me in the initial stages was it didn't feel as if I was getting much consultation at all from this company on an individual basis on any level. It seemed like this product just appeared out of nowhere. Great intention behind it, no doubt, but we needed more integration with the community. And it seems that that's happened over the last 5 years. I'd say actually a little bit longer than that, to be fair to WeWalk. I think they've been involved with the sightloss organizations around the world longer than 5 years since its launch. But the point is, now with this new version, they've clearly taken all of that learning on board. So I think this is now the time. If you're going to look at this device, it's probably this one you want to look at. I think the design is better. I do think I want to get my hands on with this one. I think this is something I would spend money on.
Now, yeah, I agree. And that's just where I was going to go. Go on.
Yeah, in terms of price. So I'm trying to work out Canadian pricing here, because I've gone through the website and it tells me that the price in Canada is $750. I'm not entirely sure that's correct, because the US pricing seems to be the same. So I'm a bit confused by that. But yeah, check locally. Of course, the good thing with the website is when you go to pre-order, if you decide to pre-order it, even if you're just inquiring for the cost, you have to put in you don't have to, but you can put in your email address and you can choose the country that you are in, and it will then give you the local pricing. When I do that for Canada, it's saying $750, so it may well be. But the price in the UK is $599. It's a discounted pre-order price. That will go up by £100 and so however many dollars in the coming months. It's due for release in June. So if I pre-order today, I'll get it in June, which would be cool. I'm going to certainly try and get hands-on with it, and this is something I am going to take for a ride. We are also going to speak to WeWalk in June. I've been trying to get them on the show for a while. They are coming on to the show with us. We were hoping to get them on before the break, but the way it's worked out, we'll talk to them when we get back in June. I'm sure we'll have lots of questions. But yeah, this is certainly interesting. I'll be intrigued to hear what you guys think. I've seen some interesting comments online, which I'm not going to refer to directly.
Okay.
But, you know, let's just say there's not... I'm getting the sense of there's... The fairest comment I've seen, and I think it is a fair comment actually, is from someone who said, I'm going to hold on and see what the Glidance offer is like, what the Glidance system that Amos Miller and his team are putting together is like. And you know what's good here? There seems to be choice in this market all of a sudden.
And yeah, it's definitely
good
exciting.
Choice. Yeah. Yeah, good choice.
Again, though, with all of these things, it's all... This is the potential of it. I'm really... You actually watched the presentation. Was there ever a practical demo of this cane being used?
No, not during the presentation. A lot of conversation, a lot of talk around the theory. We heard... The most we probably heard about the product itself was in the snippets I've given you today. Everything else was more about the organizations and the partners that they have, which was great, but I don't know if I wouldn't have necessarily featured that in
that launch
video.
Don't you think that's a big ask? Don't you think that's a big ask at that price point to trust us? I mean, where's the practical demos here? I want to see this thing working. I don't want to come across as negative, but man, I think anything like this now, we need a 30-day, no quibble trial. Refund.
Yeah. Well, I want to try
this thing out. I'm not going to spend that much money. And then, you know what? Actually, it doesn't quite work the way I assumed or thought it would work in real life.
No, listen, you're absolutely right. There is a 30-day satisfaction guarantee, as they say, that is available with this. Okay. So you can get a chance to try it and then send it back if you don't like it or don't work
on with it. That's a good thing. Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, again, I think with a device like this, there needs to be a bit more than just, you know, it arrives in the post, you turn it on and go. Because I think there's a lot of people who would struggle to get to grips with a lot of this stuff and actually get the most out of it. And I think that's something that, and they are saying they're going to be at various events over the next few months. They're going to be at Sight City in Germany. They're going to be at the NFB and ACB conventions presenting this, which is probably the best way to do it. I don't know if they'll be at Sight Village in Birmingham in the UK, which would be cool if they would be, because that's closest to us and we could get hands on with it. But but we're just going to have to wait and see how this one works. Now, I agree with you, though. I would have loved to have seen a presentation, an actual demo presentation. After all the glitz and glamour of the video, I would have liked to, instead of, no harm to the people from the organisations who do great work and all that, but truth be told, I didn't want to hear from them. I wanted to hear the product, actually, the function of the product.
Yeah, pull the cane out. Let's see it in action. Yeah.
If it's so good, let's see it working, right? So, yeah. Anyway, okay, we shall talk to WeWalk in June and we'll get more of a take on this. In the meantime, let us know what you think about all this. Feedback at doubletaponair.com. You know, I'm surprised no one's ever come out with a cane called Double Tap. Maybe we should. Maybe that's what we should. Double Tap.
Oh, ours would be terrible. I could tell you, ours would definitely not have a demo on stage if we did one.
the collapse of cane, that's what we would call it. Fall to bits within 10 minutes.
A broomstick with an iPhone sellotape to it. Yep, it'd be great.
Yeah, so there's your soundscape. We've literally given soundscape to the smart cane. Yeah, we just taped it on. Right, look, stick around. We're going to get into your emails and lots more next on Double Tap.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback at doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567 or email us feedback at doubletaponair.com.
So it was the week of the Apple event being announced, iPads potentially coming on May 7th. Also, it was the week that Meta AI was launched in Canada. You can hear our Double Tap takes on our website, doubletaponair.com. But now with the rest of the week's news in tech, here's Grace Schofield.
Thanks, guys. I'm Grace Schofield, and this is your Double Tap news this week. Meta has announced the launch of its open mixed reality ecosystem, which will make its Meta Quest operating system available to other hardware manufacturers. This move aims to allow the creation of a diverse range of mixed reality devices and apps, broadening the ecosystem and providing more consumer choice. The new ecosystem will be powered by Meta Horizon OS, a mixed reality operating system developed from extensive investments in technologies like high-resolution pass-through and spatial anchors. This expansion will allow developers a greater reach and facilitate the integration of social features across virtual spaces, potentially reshaping how consumers and businesses interact with these mixed reality technologies. Elon Musk's Neuralink has opened up for Canadian residents, expanding outside the U.S. for the first time. People with medical conditions, including quadriplegia, paraplegia, visual and hearing impairments, or limb differences, are invited to register to find out if they qualify for one of Neuralink's clinical trials. This is a big step towards advancing brain-computer interface technologies. Car manufacturer Honda has announced the development of a groundbreaking AI-based app designed to make car journeys more enjoyable for blind people. Named Honda Scenic Audio, the app uses artificial intelligence to provide a detailed audio description of the surroundings during a car journey. Honda partnered with the Perkins School for the Blind for this initiative.
My name is Sandy Lacey, and I'm the executive director of the Howe Innovation Center at the Perkins School for the Blind. People with disabilities are the world's largest minority, the only minority group anybody can join at any moment in their lives.
My name is Jason Carmel, and I'm a creative technologist. The app is really a combination of a number of different artificial intelligences working together. We use things like computer vision to actually see what's out there, and then generative AI to then describe things in a much more interesting way.
A woman rides in a Honda as the Scenic Audio app generates audio description about the world outside the car window.
The ocean's vastness stretching beyond the sandy shore, as seen from our car window.
Cassandra, Corey, Jerry, and Tanya, a diverse group of blind and visually impaired people, share their thoughts from the passenger seats.
The idea of being able to sit in a car and enjoy the scenery around me is novel.
Like, I don't know what I'm missing until I know what I'm missing.
Concrete, giving the impression of a space in transition.
That's cool.
We catch glimpses.
The Honda Scenic Audio app is currently undergoing testing and is expected to be available for download on compatible Honda vehicles in the near future. Lenovo is introducing a new accessible keyboard in their latest range of ThinkPad laptops. The 2024 design features raised bumps for easier navigation and a switch of the control and function keys to accommodate visually impaired users. In an exclusive interview for DoubleTap on YouTube, Graham Thomas, the senior technologist for Lenovo in the UK and Ireland, told Stephen Scott that visually impaired people led the way in this redesign.
One of the big sort of comments that's been made about our keyboard is we've always had the function key at the bottom left of the keyboard, and the control key was the next one in. Now, whenever customers who've come from competitors or even using desktop keyboards have said to us, look, everyone else has the control in the bottom left, then the function key, you've got it the other way around. Can you not just change this? And you can swap it in software for people who really want that functionality. But the argument's always been, if we do that for customers coming from a different brand, we could alienate all of our existing customers. And you mentioned about, you know, us being the biggest vendor. That's a lot of existing customers. But then the criticism was leveled that what about visually impaired people? And that was all it took. You know, that obvious thing, you know, we stood by it and said, look, you know, all of our other customers are used to it, but it is an obstacle for anyone who's visually impaired, because even a desktop keyboard is the other way around. So it was the right thing to do. So this year's keyboards, the control is in the bottom left, then the function key, because that's what the world's used to.
And check out DoubleTap on YouTube to hear more of that conversation. Website overlays are causing major headaches for blind people trying to navigate the internet, says disability advocate Jakob Rosin. Speaking to DoubleTap, he explained to Stephen and Sean the challenges of using such so-called accessibility tools that promise to make websites more compliant with web access regulations. However, he says there are better ways.
We don't need to fix websites to be accessible if they were built to be accessible first. And to do that, we need to create better accessibility tools for those people who create those websites, so developers and designers and content creators. And that's where AI could do much already. It looks how you work, what you do. It looks at your code and says, oh, hey, I think you forgot to label this button, or do you know that this code needs some ARIA components, whatever, to make it accessible to screen reader users. Or it would offer, like, maybe it would be useful for to do it here. Maybe you could add this so it would be more accessible. But you as a developer, as a human, need to understand what the AI is telling you to do and what's the impact of this.
GitHub has received the 2024 Accessibility at Scale Award from the DQ Systems for its efforts to include all developers, especially those with disabilities, in the technology creation process. They're committed to integrating accessibility as a core component in engineering and design. This includes training designers in accessibility and incorporating these principles into new features. GitHub is also actively addressing biases and barriers that impede full participation, demonstrating their belief that accessibility improves with collective effort. Amazon is pulling the plug on its Just Walk Out technology in U.S. fresh grocery stores. Despite the high-tech appearance, real people in India were needed to monitor the checkout process, proving the system to be less automated than touted. It's costly, requires extensive equipment, and has faced privacy concerns and operational glitches. Now, Amazon plans to focus on deploying Dash Smart Carts in its stores, hoping to streamline the shopping experience without the same privacy and complexity issues. And that wraps up another busy week in tech. That's your Double Tap News. I'm Grace Schofield.
Thank you, Grace. Another huge list of headlines in there. I wish we had time just to dive into one or two of those. There's just so much going on. I mean, that Honda Scenic Audio app just sounds amazing. I don't understand how any of that works, but Wow.
I know, exactly. The only thing that sticks out to me is how real time is that? Are we talking just taking, you know, like a Be My AI, just take a picture out of the window every 10 seconds? Or is this kind of real time as you're traveling? Which is still cool, right? But I haven't seen anything like that before. But yeah, nice.
I'm starting to see apps that can do this in almost like bursts. So it will take an image every so often and then it will kind of almost build a narrative out of it. And it's almost getting close to live audio description. Almost.
Which is exactly what we're waiting for. Yeah, but it's a cool idea. And plus, I've got to say, spatial anchors. Oh, I love that term. I've no idea what it means, but spatial anchors.
Now you're spitting. Oh, I'm not going down this road. We'll end up in trouble. Okay, hang on. I think he's waking up. He's waking up.
The Kraken awakes. Okay, sorry.
Listen, Negative Julian's been back in touch. I don't think he totally grasped your explanation.
I probably did it wrong in that case, yes.
Or liked your definition of AI board or on-demand AI was the question.
On-device.
On-device AI was what Negative Julian was picking up on. Here's his response to your response.
Uh-oh.
Hello, guys. Negative Julian here again. I was just listening to Wednesday's podcast in which you kindly replied to my query about on-device AI, and thanks for that. But as I was listening to it, in my brain, large explosions were going off, mostly of the no variety. And I feel impelled to reply to your reply, even though I know you're going on holiday very shortly and this may not be listened to, but here we go. Firstly, in his reply, Sean spoke in part about image description on device and therefore much more private. Really? I'm a regular user of Be My AI, and as an example, recently I was visiting a relative and there was a young lady there, and I mentioned Be My AI and she said, "What's that?" So I said, "I'll demonstrate," and I took a photograph of her. And Be My AI rattled on with a very detailed description. It described her hair colour, what she was wearing. Then it said she was standing in front of a fridge freezer in a kitchen, that there were magnets on the fridge freezer, that there was a table to her right-hand side, all the various things that were on the table, then that there was natural light coming from a window on her left-hand side, and there was a sink over there, blah, blah, blah. Loads of stuff, and that was before it even asked me if I wanted more details. So, another one. I was in a room, I took a picture, and amongst other things, it said, on the wall, there is a photograph of a Alsatian dog. Great. Now, you're seriously telling me that your phone, this little mobile device in your hand, is going to have such a detailed database, such a good large language model there, that without any reference to an external source, it will give you that sort of detail. It will look at a picture on the wall and say, that is an Alsatian dog. Excuse me, Sean, if I doubt it. I really do. I don't think you're even talking of, not, you're beyond gigabytes or even terabytes. You could be into picabytes of data there to answer every possible query in that sort of detail. I just do not believe that you're going to get that on a mobile phone anytime soon. I won't say never, but if it's anytime soon, I will be amazed, and amazed is the right word. So perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps you'll explain to me how it's technically possible to pack every breed of dog, every shape of clock, every type of chair, whatever, onto a mobile phone. I don't think you can, but give it a go. Secondly, and more seriously, you both spoke a lot about security, about how having it on device will make this incredibly secure. Well, excuse me, but what you are talking about here is a sort of mega app that will basically have access to everything on your phone. That's what you were saying. your contacts, your emails, your voice messages, your family photographs, maybe even your banking details and all your navigation details as well, all the navigation routes, all the places you regularly walk. It'll have all that. And this one mega app is going to have all this data about you in one place. And this makes you feel secure. It sounds to me like hacker's happy hour, frankly. Now you're going to shout, firewall, firewall is never going to leave your device. Negative, Julian, you're a fool. This is never, ever going to leave the device. It's perfectly secure. Really? Let's have a think about this. Stephen, there you are. And you ask your on-device AI, on-device AI, remind me, what make and brand of microphone was it that Sean was asking me about last week? Oh, and can you still buy that in the UK? So your on-device AI will go off and it will hunt through all your details on phone and it will find the WhatsApp message, the email, whatever it was, and it will determine what Sean was saying, what make and type of microphone he wanted. And then it will say, right, what was the second part of Stephen's question? Oh yes, is this still available in the UK? Where's it going to get that information from? It's not on device, is it? It's got to dive into the internet. So, hey, what's that just happened? It's taken this super secure data on your mobile phone and used it to constitute an inquiry in the general internet. Where's your firewall just gone? Your firewall isn't very impermeable, is it? It's leaking like a sieve, mate. It really is. And you think, well, the make of a microphone, that's hardly important, is it? So let's reconstitute this message, shall we? This inquiry. On-device AI. Look up that letter from the oncology department at the hospital, the one I scanned a couple of weeks back. Go through it and explain to me in normal English what it meant, because I didn't understand all those technical terms. Right, so it will dive off into your scans. It will find the letter from your hospital. And then what did Stephen want? Oh yes, he wanted me to explain this in normal English. Now this letter is full of technical medical terms. Are these all going to be stored on your little mobile phone? Your phone has got this much storage on it that it can store all this? I sort of doubt it. No, it's going to constitute the message, dive off into the internet to find out what all these things mean. So again, it's formed a direct link between what you're holding on your phone and the general internet. And you think this is secure? I don't think that's secure. Even if it's intended to be secure, do you really trust it 100% never to make a mistake, never to leak something you would prefer it not to leak? It's software. It doesn't really understand what's private and what's not. The difference between a microphone and a cancer diagnosis means nothing to it. Not a thing. So, I don't know. I just think you really, instead of just sitting there spouting this stuff, you really seriously need to think about what you're proposing. Because to me, this could turn into a horror story. It really could. But anyway, bye for now from Negative Julian. Hope you enjoy your holidays.
Thank you, Negative Julian.
Hope you enjoy your holidays. Oh, I'm so sorry, Julian. We seem to have really got to you there. I apologise. Stephen, what have you done?
What has it got to do with me?
There's a few different aspects here I think we need to tackle about privacy and, again, about trust
And, you know, trust is a complicated thing. How often do we trust companies? That story in the news there about Amazon, just walk out, you know, check out stores, when in fact there's 700 people working in India that are behind that. The technology, you know, don't look behind the curtain almost. So that trust is kind of broken there. So, yes, there is always an element of trust, but you're always going to reach out. But the difference, I think, is, let's take the microphone example. The conversation that I'm having with Stephen, that the AI is searching through to get the information of what microphone that is very personal. I don't want the conversation itself to be sent out to any other company. Now, to get the information of a brand of microphone and then go off and search whatever online store to see if that's still available, prices or whatever, is different than sending the entire conversation out to be processed to get that microphone brand out of it. It's still on my device. That privacy is still there, as in the conversation that we had. And just doing basically what it's doing is a Google search with a brand name. Now, again, there's a bit of trust there that is anonymized and not being able to be linked back to me if you really care about that. But there's always that link out to the internet. Of course there is. But it's all about that source of the microphone in that case. Or if we talk about cancer, I mean, if it's going out and Googling a medical term and getting a more layman's explanation of that, that's fine. As long as it's not taking that entire letter with my personal details and whatever, as long as it's not taking that, sending it off in order to get the medical terms from it and then processing, that is what is on device. That private information, the actual medical terms, the actual brand of microphone, that can be sent out to Google and searched for, absolutely, because it's not got the rest of the conversation in it. Does that make sense? Am I explaining that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two things. I think there's a conflation of two things here. There is the data on your device, which is already secure. And you're talking there, Negative Julian, about, you know, a mega app that is essentially harnessing all of this information. It's called your smartphone. You already have it. Nothing there will change. Essentially, what I'm getting from, and I'm kind of focusing this on Apple, really, when we talk about on-demand and security, what will happen is everything will live within that walled garden. It will reach out. Of course, it's not going to know the name of every kind of dog or breed or whatever. It's not going to do that. It's going to have to reach out to the internet to get that information. And this is what I was talking about yesterday, is that there may be a compromise here. There may be a compromise between what Apple offers and what you get from other providers. So Be My AI, for example, uses OpenAI. Aira Access AI uses OpenAI and Gemini. So they are reaching out to these providers to get those descriptions, to use their data, essentially, to be able to give you the description of the image that you want. Siri might not offer that. It might not even offer that capability. It might only work on device. And then you can then choose to use these other options to go out to the cloud to get your information. So, you know, you might still use Be My AI. They may not build that into the iPhone. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happens. You know, I can almost see a discussion in about 6 months where we're saying, you know, Siri, it's just not there, because, you know, I can't reach out to the internet to get information. And that's because everything is about what's on device. So, for example, you know, when did I say that I would meet Sean for coffee? And it can dig into my messages and it can surface that response. All of that is done on board, on demand, on device. It's never reaching out beyond the device to achieve that, because all the data lives on that device. But if I said, where would be a nice place to meet Sean for coffee, I'd have to ask a different app to get that. That's my impression of what we just don't know what is going to come out in iOS 18. So until it does come out, we can only really speculate on this. But knowing Apple and them always being about privacy and security, I think they will find a way to either, and of course there's another side of this here which we don't talk about, which is the efficacy of the information that we get, you know, and where the data comes from. Apple might be the only company that actually ethically sources its data. They're talking about, for example, generative AI, being able to create an image via a prompt. And they're saying that Apple, already they're saying that Apple might be the only company to have used, you know, ethical sources for this. Essentially, services like Shutterstock, or, you know, these image companies that actually create images and sell them. You know, essentially these images you can buy offline. If you were making a website, you want to use an image of something. Stock images.
Shutterstock. No, you're absolutely right. And a lot of AI companies now are coming under fire for where they got their data set from. Copyrighted material, maybe. You know, obviously with some video training, video creation AI, did they just train that on YouTube videos? In which case, that's, you know, against Google's T's and C's. So, yeah, there is that. How do you gather that much information so quickly? And, you know, do you gather it from a proper source?
But to answer your question directly, no, of course, that data set is not going to live on your phone. That would not be possible. Or at least I don't think it would be possible. What we're talking about here, the on-device side of this, the on-device processing, and I'm talking from Apple again, from their point of view, just from what I think is going to come out, it is going to be the data you already hold on your device. And it's not a mega app. It's Siri, essentially. Just Siri having access to everything on your device, which, by the way, it already does. And, you know, you're concerned about those sources or searches online. But the reality is that's going on anyway. Everything you do online is tracked. Everything you do online is, you know, these cookies that come down onto your device are tracking you. That's why if you search for something online, suddenly you get Facebook ads for it. That already happens today. Nothing's going to change. It might get even worse because it's tracking even more. But in terms of actual access to your data, I don't think that is going to be as much of a problem as you think it's going to be, because those searches from the device will be anonymized to the internet. From Apple's point of view, I can't speak about others, but I can with a safe bet, say that, you know, Apple has always been about privacy and security. They're not going to just make your data available to the web. That, I think that would just go against everything they stand for.
We'll see.
Look, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us this week. We're back again Monday. Great conversations coming up then. We'll catch you then. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Join us weekly for The Pulse with host Joita Gupta, who brings us closer to issues impacting the disability community across Canada. Watch The Pulse on YouTube or listen wherever you download your AMI podcasts.